Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SMB Online, Fed Comelon, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444 to follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And use your Chrome or Chromium-based browser. Also, if you want to listen to us on the Twitch network, you can go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you can listen to us there. You can chat with me, and I am always keeping an eye out on that chat room. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, just go to my Twitter account. That's SFUOnCall. That's SFUONCALL. Also, I have a personal account, which is outside of the podcast account, and that's Paul Franz, PaulFranz. And just a reminder, if you want to follow me there, I talk about being Catholic and also tech stuff, which I always love. And of course, every once in a while, I get SFB stuff in there. And, of course, Franz Games is also available to announce news when it comes to Franz Games and also client announcements for client updates. And, of course, the Lovely Talkcast gets turned to a podcast and available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Cole is still busy working on the art for the Volume Master Starship book and Shapeways. He was in an accident earlier this week, so please keep your thoughts and prayers with him. He's fine, but you never know about those things. So far he's been fine, but his neck might start acting up or something. Just keep him in your thoughts. Steve Patrick, of course, is always busy working on SMB updates, but also on the Falling Master Starship book. Gene, of course, is busy on Facebook and being the editor and reviewer of said things like, the Falling Master Starship book. And, of course, keeping up to date on different marketing things. Moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star Tournament 3. That one is... The round one is almost completed. We actually had a replacement because someone had a real life issue and had to drop out. So, and had someone to replace him. So, round one is almost completely completed. Mr. Patrick has already announced round two and that it needs to get done by the 20th of March. That's a hard deadline, folks. Just a reminder. When it comes to the online client itself, I was busy working on the tractor beam because there was an issue with that. Also, I worked on the campaign rooms because currently it was previously it didn't actually list any ships that were listed in the library that weren't part of the master ship chart, which is embedded in the client. So you never could actually add additional ships via just the library, which is the way the client is supposed to work. But now that works, and it is. I will be having that available this weekend. I was trying to get it done this week, but had other issues, especially that I found out about that tractor beam bug that I had to work on. When it comes to the library, unfortunately, there have been no progress for this week, and the complete conversion is still 2,522, with yet to be converted at 799, leaving percent complete at 75.94%. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got just Barry and me. It's going to be a quiet evening with just us two, but we'll be discussing the Euthyche, I think I got that pronunciation right, which was a lesser Magellanic cloud empire at one point in the life of the universe. And we will be discussing the weapons and the systems on that, and maybe a little bit of the history. You never know. So with that, hey Barry, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Oops. My alarm's going off.
Why is your alarm going off?
Oh, because I set the alarm to remind me to...
to dial in.
I snoozed it. Yeah, and then I snoozed it rather than set it off.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how you pronounce you thinking, as long as we both can agree on it.
Agreed.
Who knows? Yeah. I guess, yeah.
I was saying, you think so you might know, but they don't really use voice.
Yeah. Until we have some actors with a British accent or some other accent playing them in a Star Trek movie, I guess. Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, I'm looking at the reference ship.
Yeah, are you looking at the one from Ken?
Yeah. It's been interesting ship. It doesn't really have much damage output per se,
though. I must admit the weapons are interesting.
Yes,
you must admit
they
that.
Are.
Yeah, because I have to check to see there's been an addendum to the rules I looked up the boson drill. I was reading through the rules for that, and the one thing that I found interesting is it never mentions how much damage, at least from what I read. I don't remember seeing anywhere it actually mentions the drill bit.
Oh, it does. It does.
Well, it doesn't. I don't see it mention how much damage it does.
Yeah, it's shown in the table. 2 points of damage.
Oh. That's what that thing is.
Yes. That's the bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It says the drill bit has 2 damage. The drill and the bit element. The drill element has a damage amount that attenuates with range. And the bit element, which being antimatter, does not. The drill element, like the shield cracker, never does internal. But like the shield cracker, the drill element bypasses the VRF.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike shield cracker, the weapon does not interfere with application of general reinforcement.
Right. And actually, I went back through and looked at the VRF, and there's a couple of different weapon systems that it does not apply to.
Like what?
Hang on. Let me go back into that section of the rule. Well, shield crackers, that surprised me. And obviously, boson drills. But let's see. VRF. Let's see. Okay, it's specifically, let's see, Hellbores, VRF does a lot of reduction too. Developing plasmas, it does, PPPDs, it does. But, okay, so Spearfish drones, not that we use them, charge penetrator missiles, ignore the outer, okay, and therefore they do not Shield crackers, boson drills, and energy howitzers ignore VRF.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just think about the client and going, now nah, yeah, there are exceptions to the rules. Thank you very much, Ken. Well, it makes things harder because
I know.
I built into the client so that when you have those shield configurations, which are Magellanic, all damage applies VRF. If you bring up the damage allocation, actually there's one section which says, okay, the VRF value is this.
So yeah.
It's been a while since I actually saw that, but I remember that being there. Because I remember actually working on the VRF and implementing that before the actual product was even put out there. You know, so the idea was so that Ken could play test some of his ships on the client before it was released.
Yeah, well, the Yusiki has other issues like that positron lancet.
Oh, yeah. Especially if it's in lance mode.
Right. Well, if it is in lance mode. Yeah.
Oh, if it's in lance mode, that's a dangerous little weapon.
It is.
And again, it's one of those ones like,
fortunately.
Thank you, Ken, for a quirk in and things. In this case, obviously, the damage allocation is done quite a bit different if you are put that in lance mode.
Yeah. So this is a ship. It's got 8 lasers, 4 twin lasers, and 4 medium lasers.
Mm-hmm.
And the twin lasers are, each twin laser, of course, can fire as a pair of light lasers. So it's kind of like a half Gatling.
Right.
But it's half as efficient as a Gatling. But still, you have 4 of them. And its laser arcs are really, really nice.
Oh, agreed.
And then it's got turn mode B. But the boson drills, normally I'd say that's nothing to write home about. First of all, you only have 3 of them. Second of all, they can't be overloaded. Third of all, range 1 to 2, they max out normally doing 8 points of damage, which is meh.
Right.
Yeah, for 3 points of power.
Right, which is part of the minor issue. I don't want to call it minor issue because it only requires 1 point of warp per weapon. So it's 2 points from any source and 1 point of warp.
Right. And you only have a total of 12 bits.
Right. You have a magazine of 4 bits.
Yeah.
But you can, actually, of course, here's the crazy part about the weapon. That is, after you use up all your bits, you can still fire.
Yes, but only in drill mode. At which point, and it's kind of like a shield cracker, though.
Right, but it's under load. Let me just check about this, because it's called
the
under
drill
load.
Element only damage.
Right.
Underload. Yeah, but the drill element only damages shields. It does not do any...
Oh, understood.
Yeah. Right, so it's...
I'm just looking at underload. Okay, so it costs 2 points of power then. So it is like a shield cracker. I actually have a better shield cracker.
Yes. It's a better shield cracker.
Yes.
But, and then for a point of warp, And it can be, well, unlike a shield cracker, it doesn't cost anything to hold. It runs off capacitor, right?
Right. Yeah, the shield cracker just, you know, is zero hold, and this costs 1 point, I think?
One. Yeah. 1 point. But then if you hold it, you lose the bit. I mean, it doesn't burn the ammo, but you need reserve warp power to, if you hold it, you need reserve warp power to fire on the following turn.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh, agreed. So you can put 3 points of power into the weapon for the first turn. And if you don't fire it, then you can use 1 point of power to hold the drill portion, but then you have to use the reserve warp to actually fire
the bit
with the bit. Yeah. Which is weird, to say the very least. One thing actually I found, I was reading a little bit of the background in my mind. It was interesting. In that, you know, obviously they were doing eugenics for quite, you know, for at least 1,000 years and trying to make themselves smarter and so forth, until they finally were able to, you know, create ships that so they could leave their planet. But they're basically squids, you know, squid creatures that communicate using radio frequencies and lights to talk back and forth, which makes things interesting.
Yeah.
One of those interesting things that I was reading about the background is that the Andromedans, basically, when they ran into the Uthiki, they basically just wanted to wipe them out. They went to the home world and just kept on bombarding it until they were all gone, you know.
Right.
And then later on, they you know, after the Andromedans were defeated in LMC, they found a couple of colonies of Uthiki who had lost their ability, lost the technology, really. And they went, we don't want it back. Mm-hmm. After what happened in the home world, we're going to stay right here. We're going to be nice and safe. And people are going to leave us alone. So.
Now, the boson drill, here's the part. ME7.353, unshielded. Ignore the drill element and apply the bit element normally. This applies to Andromedan PA panels. So, does that mean that boson drills completely, just the bit element is the only part that does damage? And it does only internal damage on an Andromedan and ignores the PA panels?
I'm looking at this for a moment. That makes no sense. Yeah, actually, no. You're right. That's what it seems to indicate. I don't see anything else. Because I was thinking, okay, shingle or shield. No, it's not actually. It doesn't mention the PA panels for that, which
it treats it as unshielded.
Right. It's considered unshielded because it explicitly says this applies to Andromeda PA panels.
Right.
So it ignores the drill element, only applies the bit element. So when you run out of bits, you can do no more damage to the Andromeda. Now, of course, there's a problem.
Right.
And that, let me look at this.
It's not that much damage, but it's all internal.
Right, exactly. Okay, yeah. So basically, in the case of if you have a Thicky against an Andromedan with, if you're able to drain, to completely use up all the magazines, that's 12 of them, that's 24 internals.
If they all hit.
If they all hit, yes. Understood. But still.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing that the Andromeda can do against it.
Right.
You know? This is not like a shield where you can like, hey, you have to get past the reinforcement. Same for the, you know, PA panels. You know, normally when you hit the PA panel, okay, you have to get through the PA, you know, to fill up the PA panel so you actually can get internals. And then this weapon, it says, no, forget about the PA panel. It just does internals. Boom. So I can understand why the Andromedans were terrified of them. Of course, when I first read the background history, I was thinking about maybe, you know, before I really read into the Boson Drill, and you just reminded me about the Unshielded, that it might have been because of, they think he reminded them of another race or did that, or in the case they just saw the Boson Drill and how it did damage and went there, that these were the most
deadly.
Dangerous, yeah, the dangerous empires in all of the Omega, you know.
Right, and their biggest ships were pretty tiny, actually. They didn't have a dreadnought, for example.
Oh, that reminds me. Okay, so they can do it. Okay. I was just wondering.
Their biggest ship is their war cruiser with a BTZ rating of 125.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow. But, given the way they were described in the background history, I was just wondering if the ships couldn't hit, you know, because they described the weapons, that the weapons really don't have much of a shock factor because of the Yuthiki themselves.
Because of what?
The Yuthiki themselves. Let's see if we can find it. It's MR50. Bum, 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 bum. This must be MR3s then. No, that's the Anine. That's a Butterfly.
But still, it's going to do internal damage to any ship. So that's kind of interesting. Now, the positron lancet is an interesting weapon. It's like a fusion beam. Mm-hmm. It's got a capacitor.
Oh yeah.
But it's a fairly efficient capacitor in terms of all the capacitors that lose energy. This one only loses what? One every, hang on a second. The positron lancet. Let's see.
Holding cost is 1/4 of the total power in the capacitor.
Right.
Now, the weird part about this one, about the Lancet, is this. Rule M6.24. Cooling. For each turn of firing, the weapon requires one turn of cooling. And this is the weird part to me. Cannot be armed or fired during the game turn subsequent to the turn which it is fired. But it's about talking about status. Don't worry about that. Power can be added to the capacitor although the weapon cannot be fired. It's like, wait a minute, what's the difference between arming and adding power to the capacitor?
Other than the fact that you can... I don't know. If you're not cooling, you can arm it and fire it. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess Ken has some strange terminology.
Right.
If you look at some of his other games, He refers to charging a weapon as cool down, which never made any sense to me.
Right. Well,
I'm spending power to cool down the weapon. No, that's really charging it. No, that he calls it cool down. It's like, okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but at the same time, when it comes to outside of this, what was it? There was a system they created for basically Starfleet battles where it didn't use the energy allocation that had the idea of points. Yeah, but it wasn't energy. It was interesting. But I can understand the concept of cooling being cooling and that you only can fire it so often, but you can...
But he says you need to spend power to cool, and then it's...
Right. Well,
yeah.
Come on.
I know.
It's a weird concept. Barry, some of the things that he's done with... what's the one system?
Squadron Strike.
Thank you. Squadron Strike. Where it's trying to be Newtonian in the physics. And
yeah.
Part of that also is the heat. And to... When you fire your weapon, you need to shunt it off the heat from the firing of the weapon, you know, to the heat sinks.
Oh, I know.
You
know? Yeah, I know.
And that might require power to get
very much into thermodynamics about that.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Which you got to admit, it's an interesting idea. The only thing that really for me was, I know it's a genius kind of neat kind of thing, if you understand it, which is the 3D plotting of how the movement system worked. That was the tough part about Squadron Strike for me.
Absolutely. And not only the 3D maneuvering, but I found shooting weapons arcs and what was in arc and what wasn't and what shields were getting hit. That was actually the toughest part.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So here's a bizarre thing that I don't know if you saw about the positron lancet. Look at its firing arc.
Okay. I'm kind of trying to find it on the ship.
In the center.
Is that the tags? No,
no.
Puff. There it is.
Let's see.
They're 360.
Yeah. It's a 360 firing arc heavy weapon.
Dang.
Yeah. And he calls it the secondary weapon.
Yes, I noticed that.
I think it does. What?
I noticed that. No,
but it does more damage than the boson drill.
Agreed. And then you have the whole issue with the drill element of the boson drill, which is the major portion of the damage goes towards the shield. While if you didn't have...
The positron lancet is it's got its own weapons quirks. I mean, it will do regular damage and internal damage, but it has standard mode where it's resolved just like any other weapon, or you could fire it in a Hellbore mode, basically. Or Lancet mode, they call it, which is basically
Lance mode. Yeah,
Lancet mode.
Lance.
Yeah.
By the way, yeah. And with Lance mode, basically you take the damage and then you divide it by two.
Right. Round down.
Right, round down. And that...
Yeah.
And those are... internals, and then things get really crazy. because
if it hits a shield, even if it's a 1 point shield, it acts just like half damage on everything else, which is why you want it on second Hellbore firing mode.
Right.
So that other weapons hit first, take down the shield.
Mm-hmm.
And if you anticipate you'll be able to take down the shield, then the positron lancet mode, you might want to use it in lancet.
Right.
But probably only if you, let's say you fire it in standard mode, which is only 2 points of power. It averages 5.5 points of damage at range 4. It's no matter what the range, it's the same damage. So out at range 12, it's got a 2/3 chance of hitting and does 5.5 average damage for 2 points of power.
Yeah.
That's much more efficient than a disruptor.
Yeah. Well, of course, there's only two of them.
There's only two of them, but you got that 360 arc.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, if you point a down shield at that ship and he fires it in lancet mode, let's say he does 1 or 2 points of damage, but even if he rolls like a 7, it's going to go right through the deck.
Yep.
I don't know whether that's worth it or not.
Don't know. But yeah, that's the weird thing when it's in lance mode. The damage allocation, oh, that's a scary thing.
That it goes straight through.
Yes. Basically, each box is considered a one-time system box.
Only. Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, man, you can get deep. You can get so freaking deep in a deck. Holy cow.
You can.
Stuff that you thought was protected is not protected.
Right. Now, it only does half damage doing that.
Right.
And here's the thing. If it hits a shield, even if it's a one box shield in that lancet mode, it does damage. It does only half damage, but it does it in the regular way.
Right.
And I think you can have your general reinforcement on reserve power come up for that. Let's see. Which lancet hits first is determined by the order of the weapons which were fired. Note that general reinforcement applied via reserve power during the first or second Hellbore step can be used against lancet damage. The reinforcement is applied against the largest damage amount striking during the damage step. So let's say you fire two lancets. Let's say one of them hits.
Right.
And it's in lancet mode, but it's against a down shield. I need just 2 points of reserve power to generate 1 point of general reinforcement, and then it does damage, but it's only doing half damage, and it uses the regular DAC. So that's one way. You might want to keep some reserve general reinforcement.
Oh, understood. But of course, here's the gotcha for that, and that is that you in that case, what you want to do is fire it in lance, mode. In the second Hellbore slot.
Yes.
So that.
Right. But he can use the general reinforcement at the second Hellbore mode.
Oh, understood. But the thing is, if I'm assuming you're firing this with additional weapons.
Right. So let's meaning say that you dropped the.
Right. The first weapons drop the shield, possibly getting internals, possibly. The question is, at that point is, any power that they're going to be using for reinforcement is probably going to be specific. And the question is, will they have any reserve power left over to even do general reinforcement? And because if you have general reinforcement previously allocated, it gets its first enough in the normal fire decision.
Correct.
So that gives you a greater chance of when you do a second fire lance in the lancet and the lance mode, and the second hellbore firing is done. Now, I'm assuming that you will only do that if there's a chance of actually doing internals.
Right.
If you don't think...
Yeah, if you don't think you're going to get through, fire it in standard mode.
Right. Because otherwise, it's a waste.
Yeah, it does less damage.
Right. Exactly. And so there's no reason to.
Now, as the overload mode, it you know, potentially can do, at range 8, it can do up to 12 points of damage.
Yeah.
But a minimum of 7.
Right.
Which tends to exceed what a disruptor will do.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, positron lance, it's a nasty, nasty weapon.
Agreed.
And it's got a capacitor.
Mm-hmm. Which is always a good thing. I like weapons with capacitors. Because it gives you that flexibility that other weapon systems don't.
Right. And then the banks, this ship has 4 bank boxes.
Yep.
That's a lot.
Oh, understood. What are EMRs?
So she's got EMR?
Yeah.
Emergency bridge.
Oh, okay. I'm used to it being abbreviated EMER.
Right. But tags, now that's a system we haven't talked about yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, you put 1 point of power into it. It can't be held. And
target existing.
You fire it at a target, and then 4 impulses later it turns on. And then for 8 impulses, that target, you have a -1 on all your laser rolls.
Wow.
Well, -2, rather. -2. -2 on all your laser rolls. So, basically, your lasers do 1 point more of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really nice for the light lasers.
Okay. But obviously, because there's a 4 impulse delay in activation of tagging, having so it solidifies the acquisition, the lock on, that it's kind of pre-announcing that you plan on firing, at least sometime after 4 impulses.
Right.
How long does that last?
8 impulses.
8 impulses. So after it gets activated in 4 impulses, 8 impulses after that, that's when it dissipates?
Yeah. But you could fire it over a turn. It can be used over a turn break, too.
Right. And I guess that gives some flexibility that, sometime in the next 12 on. Not in the next 4, but after, 8 impulses after that, that gives you a good period of time to use it, you know.
Right.
So it's not like they know specifically what impulse you're going to be firing.
Right. But here's the thing. If you fired before impulse 25, you can fire it again on impulse. You can use the tag on impulse 28, knowing it comes up on impulse 1 when your lasers come up again.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know whether or not that ship, it's quirky.
Mm-hmm.
as I said, its damage potential, I think, is a little bit on the light side, although it's got a lot of lasers. So I don't know. I don't know whether its damage potential is heavier or lighter. I mean, the boson drills are like, well, nothing to worry. But then the bits kind of, yeah. And then the positron lance does a lot of damage. And the 360 can't hurt.
Yeah.
But it's every other turn.
Right. And then you have the four medium lasers.
And four medium lasers.
And the four twin lasers.
And the twin lasers are... That's a lot of laser power.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And those lasers are a little bit enhanced with the tag, too.
Right.
But I have no idea how that chip will... And it's got a lot of... let's see. It takes 8 points of power to fire every laser on board. But she's got 16 points of capacitor. I don't know what he was thinking. That's nice. So you can fire every laser on the ship twice without reloading.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but at the same time, you need to have more banks than the total amount of ability to fire. That's
mm-hmm.
You have to, because of the problem with banks, as we pointed out before, is that they get hit on phasers. They're considered the best phaser. So every third phaser hit, you're hitting a bank. And there goes four
volley. Every third one per volley.
And that's even worse. Now, obviously, getting three phasers in a single volley is pretty hard to do. No, that means you've got a pretty good volley when it comes to internals for that to take place.
But remember that the first volley that gets through to that, the shields, you're probably going to have fired at least four lasers before you take that kind of internal damage.
Oh, understood. Oh, I understand totally.
Which means that you have an empty bank box, and given the fact that that ship has so much banks, that's something where it's like, yeah, I'll take a bank box as one of my first laser just to protect the lasers, because I've got an empty bank. I've got, and if I even go down to two bank boxes can fire every laser on the ship.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
So if I take my first laser hit as a bank box, which is the easiest laser to repair, why not do that? Because it protects the laser, and that's a bank box I'm probably not going to need again.
Understood.
It's already empty.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have padding if I can take another bank box and still not lose any capability.
Yeah, that's when it gets started. Gets a little tight.
Right, but the other thing is that they're easy to repair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That could be an interesting ship. It would certainly be one. I had ignored it. I never did a SSD for it on Starfleet Battles Online, but it would be an interesting
ship
one
definition,
to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we can try it out at a paper and pencil at Gamers of Summer or something like that.
Yeah, oh, I'd love to. I think it'd be really neat.
Yeah.
Because I don't think either of us have actually played that much of LMC Empires.
I have. Online, I've played the Magadim and the Yanin, and I've never played the Batavai either.
Mm-hmm.
But I have played Yanin and Magadim, and Yanin is kind of weird. The neutron beams just are meh. they look scary, but then you realize how much power they take, and it's like, no.
Right.
And you're really only firing two per turn. Now, the rear-firing plasmas are nice on that one, but...
Yeah, but the plasma E's, right?
Yeah, the plasma E's. Which are cheap to load, reload.
And right.
It's two-turn arming weapon.
Yes.
Right. I think it's 2 and 3 is the energy cost.
I thought it was 2 and 2. It's right after the boson drill. There it is. Energy. 2 turns, it requires 2 points of energy from any source. For the first turn, arming 3 points. Yeah, you're right. 3 points of power from
any source. Scary that I did that from memory.
Yep. That's scary.
That is scary. I can't remember what I had for dinner last night, but I can remember the arming cost of a plasma E, which I really...
Yeah. Well, the question is, how much did it matter of what you ate last night, you know?
Right. Whereas plasma E arming cost is very important to remember.
When you're playing the game, yes, it is.
Yeah.
You know? Especially if you're playing on, real life and without the aid of a computer.
Yeah. So in the last 10 days, prior to 10 days ago, I've never flown on Delta Airlines in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I flew from last week, Thursday, I flew from Atlanta to Pittsburgh on Delta. And then Monday I flew from York to Columbus, Ohio on Delta. And then tomorrow I'm flying from Columbus, Ohio to Memphis on Delta. And then Tuesday I'm flying back from Memphis back to Columbus on Delta.
Yeah, always on the go, Barry, always on the go.
I've been flying a bit lately.
Yeah, you can say that again.
But prior to that trip down to Atlanta, I had not flown yet this year. So it's like...
Understood.
But it's... oh, boy.
Yeah, as I've said before, Ken had a real hard task in front of him when it comes to creating these empires for the LMC, because he couldn't make them too strong, because if they were too strong, then the question is, well, how the heck did the Andromeda defeat them? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did a phenomenal job.
Oh, I agree. He did an excellent job on the empires and balancing them, so that they've got good strengths, but they're not so strong that you can't see the Andromedans actually defeating them.
Right. And they've all got interesting strengths. I mean, on paper, you look at the Bag of Demons, you're going, holy crap, that is a killer kick-ass race with their ships. But there's some weaknesses built into it, and if you know what you're doing, you can... It's not quite as powerful as you think.
Right. And I think that is the point, really.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about the Celtorium.
Yes.
And the balancing that was act that was discussed on the discussion board about, because I don't remember if I brought it up last week, but I know you and Barry, you and I had discussed it a little bit on the phone, but not on the podcast, which is, one thing I was pointing out when I actually got the things got posted onto the discussion board about the game mm-hmm. was that,
yeah,
it felt like, well, the Satorian, you know, was a little weak. But one thing I pointed out was that I know Mr. Patrick wasn't about to get slapped again because he already made one mistake way back in the past where he put a change in for the Celtorian without actually properly play testing because all of the players were right. They were all saying the same thing. It needed more power. It needed like two phasers. And he padded two phasers and it was a killer machine. It was a killer ship. A ship with 10 phaser ones. What's wrong with this picture?
Right.
And one thing that was pointed out by Peter Bakia, he was basically mentioning, he thought that it's one of those ships that was never designed for single ship combat. It was mainly designed for fleet combat. You know, mm-hmm. where the weaknesses that are inherent to the Satorian, you know, i.e. it doesn't have any mobile terrain, nothing to actually distract his opponent from basically just keep on just chasing him after him, you know. And actually,
right.
That's the funny part. That was the funny part. Actually, I was thinking about that a little bit. And I had a crazy, crazy idea. I'm not sure if this would work or not. But I think I'd be willing to try it. Which is, I think there might be a way of adding a little bit of ability for the Satorian so he doesn't have to worry about being chased. Now, it's not mobile terrain, but it's better than nothing. Which is, give the Satorian 2 T-bombs.
Oh, yeah. That is terrain.
Because of, yeah, you can have it so drop it out the shuttle bay, and it will force the opponent to turn, or at least to move on, you know, instead of chasing you, it has to give you a little extra movement away from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yeah.
If you.
Now, would these be visible T-bombs?
Of course.
Or would they be.
Yeah.
Okay, so you see them.
Yeah, you'd see them. Now, obviously, the T-bombs would have both the pseudo T-bombs and the regular T-bombs with it. And in my mind, you don't mm-hmm. you still don't limit it to not be able to transport.
So they're out the hatch only.
Well, you can limit it so they don't transport. At the moment, I don't see any reason why you should. You'd need to. I think you need the mm-hmm. ability to transport out for the case of you want to actually build up some mobile terrain, i.e. like two T-bombs, maybe one fake, one real.
Yeah.
And have it so that there's basically, you're building up a little wall. It doesn't have, they don't have to be,
right.
you know, right one next to the other. You can have it, actually have it two hexes between two of them. So that, you know, okay, you have a choice. You can go around one way, you can go a long way around the other way. You can try to go between the two and then take the damage on your shields. You know, take 10 points off one of your shields.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know? Your choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I think, you know, I think maybe the idea of using T-bomb might not be such a bad idea to make it so that the Satorian has some mobile terrain. You know, maybe it might help balance it out a little bit.
Yeah. One of the going back to the
Uthiki?
What is it? Yeah, the Uthiki. Its phasers are, in a lot of ways, very similar to Kzinti in terms of 8 light lasers and 4 heavy lasers, or medium lasers.
Mm-hmm. True. That's true. Of course, the big difference, I'm sure you realize, is that with the Zinti, it's like 360-degree coverage of the phaser 3s. While...
This one's only FX.
Right. Because with Zinni, you've got right side, left side, you've got your 120? I'm not sure if it's 120 degrees or whatever. But every single arc, you've got some phaser 3s that can fire.
Right. This one only has one medium laser in the rear of it. It only has
the left side, right side, medium lasers is the only thing that can fire directly at outside right, the FX arc. Right. Yeah, the big question, obviously, for this ship, if you look at it, in my mind, is power. Yeah, for the most part, the weapons that he has don't cost that much power. But at the same time, mm-hmm. Well, actually, this is a two-third arming ship, two-third movement type ship.
Right. And remember that it's got enough bank boxes that it doesn't have to charge its lasers every turn.
That is true.
Now, here's another bizarre thing. That ship, although it has a lot of laser firepower,
mm-hmm.
It only has 8 laser boxes.
Yeah, it's true.
12 if you include the banks.
Yeah, because of you've got the twin lasers.
Right. So there's a lot of ships with 10 or 12, 10 lasers, 10 phasers, and this ship only has 8. So you need to have the bank boxes there as laser or phaser damage soak.
Right, to soak that up, yeah.
And that may be another reasons why Ken gave it 4 bank boxes, which is kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. Agreed. Some of the design decisions on this are definitely fascinating, if not at the very least interesting.
Yeah, Ken did some interesting thinking on it.
Right. Oh, yeah. And obviously, one of the big things, which is quirky and which is an interesting idea in my mind, is with the LMC, the whole idea of directional sensors.
Yes.
You know, if it's in the front half, you have one set of sensors. Rear half, you have a different set of sensors. They're completely independent. Unlike with...
Right. Well, the sensor banks are FX and RX.
Okay.
So there is some overlap.
Yeah, true. That's true. You got a point there. But still, you've got, the whole idea of that your sensors don't cover 360 degrees.
Right.
Unless
you power up the fronts and the backs.
Right. Well, that's another thing that you can, if you want to, you actually can save energy, as you pointed out in the past, that you don't have to charge mm-hmm. all, you don't have to charge both the front and the rear sensors. And especially right. for this ship. Especially for this ship, that how often will you actually charge the rear sensors? How often?
Not that often, because most of your weapons will fire in fact, in the FA arc, you can fire every weapon in the ship except for one medium laser.
Right. But
in the FX Dark, you lose the boson drills.
Right. But you know how it's not very often that you actually have you mean firing when something's in the rear arc.
Correct.
Because of even your lasers are mostly FX, especially your twin mm-hmm. lasers. So if there's any defensive fire that you're going to be doing, most probably it's going to be in the FX arc.
Yeah.
So this is one of those ships that I could easily see you never charging the rear sensors.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you get that positron lancet.
I understood. Understood. There are those going to be those opportunities where, you know, fortunately, you got a nice weapon that's 360. So chasing you mm-hmm. might not be exactly a good thing for your health.
Right, right. Well, what you want to do is take that first volley on a shield other than your number one.
Right.
Because otherwise, your chasing days are over.
Oh, agreed.
That's a hard ship to chase without a number one shield.
I think you'd be this is one of the ships that I think you'd be fine without a number one shield. I mean, like any other ship that would have, you know, be lost of their number one shield. Obviously, it's difficult, but it can fight out its number two and number six shields just as well.
Yes.
There's only one minor difference, and that is, and of course, even that's hard, which is you can't get one of the medium lasers in arc. And, well, that's only available if you centerline someone anyway. So,
right.
You're not really losing much.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I think, Lotus Shield number one, it's no worse off than any other ship. There are some ships that if you lose your shield number one, it's over. It's over. Not really over, but it makes it really, mm-hmm. really difficult to fight because so many things are in the FA arc, you know.
Right. Oh, man, I'm falling asleep here.
Okay. Well, I'll
what time is it?
It's past 10:30.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I have an early morning wake up.
Understood, Barry. You have a good night.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Yep. So, this evening we'll discuss the Uthiki and actually even brought up my little crazy idea for balancing the Satorian, which I would actually like to research that idea. Possibly, you know, have it so that the Satorian has the transporter bombs, just two transporter bombs. Let them to do the transporting of it. Heck, to be honest, I would love to see the King Eagle get a full-fledged nuclear space mine, the 35 pointer, instead of having just have the T-bomb. I think that would be awesome. You know, don't let it be hidden, but give it to 35. At the very least, that's going to definitely, when it comes to the King Eagle and a 10-point T-bomb, 10-point T-bomb you can hit and you can keep going. You know, yes, you lose your shield. Whip-dee-doo. You lose part of a shield. If you hit a nuclear space mine, 35-point nuclear space mine, you lose your freaking shield and you probably go do internals. So that's one thing. You will completely and you will avoid. You know, it's like a type 4 versus a type 1 drone. A type 4 drone, you're not, for the most part, you're not going to want to have it hit you. Type 1, you might actually have it, if you don't have the phasers, you'll be willing to take a drone strike on one of your shields and keep going. Yes, is it good? Not necessarily, but it's a single shield for 12 points of damage, and if you can, by getting that extra phaser that's available to fire at your opponent's ship or at something else that's more important than some 12 points of damage, you know, like a Type 4. You know, if you don't have enough phasers to knock down both the Type 4 that you know is coming in and Type 1, you want to use your phasers to knock down the Type 4 because that's 24 points of damage versus 12. So, you know, I think T-bombs, I think that might actually be an interesting idea to research, to try out. See, maybe somebody might be interested in playing a Saltorian with and giving me two T-bombs. I might see if I can look somebody up about that and see if they're interested in such a playtest. And I'd like to do that quite a few times. You know, I think it'd be interesting. I think it'd truly be interesting to do it, you know. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.